Welcome to the Adam Savage Project. I'm Adam.
I'm Norm.
And I'm Evan.
Evan Narcisse, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you guys for having me. I mean, this isn't the first time we've talked, but like it's the first time we talked on this podcast, right? In this way.
In this way, for sure. I think the last time, we passed each other a bunch, like New York Comic Con.
Yeah, a bunch.
And sure. Like Silicon Valley Comic Con was when you joined us the first time. That was like maybe 2 or 3 years ago. You had just started writing Rise of the Black Panther.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you count the forever time paradigm that we're in now, it's even longer, right?
And you are talking to us from the great soon-to-be blue state of Texas.
One hopes, and I'm not going to be shy about my politics. Yeah, we can only hope. If a global pandemic doesn't turn this state blue, then I don't know what will.
But, you know, how are you doing? Tell us how. I hear you've had in addition to the Earth having a rough time, you have also had a rough time recently.
Yeah, I mean, I'm better. I'm well, is what I should open by saying. But I definitely broke a major bone in my body this year, this summer. I broke the femoral neck, which is the part of your femur that kind of comes out at a angle and goes into your hip socket.
No way.
Yeah, that was not fun. It was hurt. I mean, I was riding a bike. I fell off the bike. It's not a heroic story by any means. The only heroic part of it was that initially I thought it was just a really bad contusion. I thought it was a bad bruise, right? And so I knew there was pain as soon as I got up, and I had to walk home from where I crashed. And it's not far at all, maybe 2 blocks, but it was the longest 2 blocks of my life. And it was excruciating pain the whole time. And I get home. My wonderful daughter, God bless her, tries to help me. And she's like, take deep breaths. You want some ice? She's a treasure. And I was, flopping on the couch, trying to get comfortable, icing it. Wasn't getting better. And, day goes on. I go to a care facility. And they're like, just from the way I was presenting, they're like, yeah, you probably broke something. And like, really? And a dose of morphine and ketamine and an ambulance ride later, I get x-rayed at the hospital, and they're like, yeah, you broke a bone. And I was like, well, damn, I'm too young to break a bone. And apparently gravity don't care for any of that. So there was surgery. There were pins put in.
That is the most mechanically stressed part of the femur.
Yes. And that's the thing. Like, it's not like – I'm lactose intolerant, so I always worry about not getting enough calcium. They're like, nah. There's like the way you fell on that is not supposed to take weight like that. Like it's supposed to take weight, coming up, right, and distribute it across your hip. But I wound up falling on my side. So like all my weight and all the pressure, it's not used to getting from that vector, as I understand it, and it broke. And I was told not to put any weight on it for 8 weeks. And that meant I was in a wheelchair. I lived in a two-story house. I was in a wheelchair for much of that time. And I couldn't use crutches because I also sprained my wrist really badly. So I couldn't put weight on it. And so it was crutches. Rather, it was a wheelchair and a walker up until very recently. I've probably been back on my feet. I got cleared to put weight back on my feet more than a month ago. And that's been a journey because like, all right, you do forget how to walk, like people talk about, oh, it's just like riding a bike. It's like, no, if anything, walking should be easier than riding a bike. And the mechanics of my gait are definitely different. And I'm very self-conscious about it. And, that's what I'm trying to get back to walking the way I used to, with the speed and confidence and dare I say flair that I used to do. but yeah, it's been rough. I'm lucky that I'm able to recover, most of my mobility so far, but was a rough time and it was hard to, keep my spirits up.
Sure.
I thought so much of my life was going to change and my wonderful girlfriend said, she said, this is temporary. and she was such a great help. But it was really hard, you know. I mean, especially with the backdrop of everything else going on, right? Global pandemic, social unrest, protests over embedded systemic racism in our various forms of government. Yeah. Yeah, not a great time to be laid up in the hospital bed.
I mean, we're in a position where if I can't find a sock, I become semi unhinged because the membrane between I got this and I'm losing my mind is paper thin, and then you add a broken bone to that, man.
Yeah. It was hard, but thankfully I had a lot of friends step up, family constantly checking in on me. My wonderful daughter just doing like so much at home to help, and an amazing girlfriend. So you know, I didn't mean to get all personal at the outset, but yeah, like this is where I found myself. And you know, it was rough, you know, but oddly, maybe a little bit counterintuitively, one of the things that did get me through was like thinking about work, thinking about some of those projects I'm on and wanting them to see them to fruition and hoping that, you know, they impact, like, you know, fans and people who are going to play or watch these things a certain way. So we'll get more into that. Well, later.
That's, you know, we've adjusted the podcast because one of the things I always want to talk about is where we find our inspirations and all the strange and wonderful places they exist. And, I want to help people find their inspiration. And the last time we talked, you had just gone from being a writer to actually being a writer of some fiction, writing the Black Panther origin comics. And I'm just like, I'd like to just check in and see creatively how the current global mood has been affecting your creativity, and then also how you dealt with it through the bone break.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things I've always said, like in my career as like a critic, a journalist, and now a creative writer is like I've written a lot about superheroes, and superheroes are aspirational figures, right? Like they show us the best in humanity, the worst in humanity, the complexity of human behavior, right? So like they give us things to aspire to, you know, when you're talking about villains, things to hopefully avoid and not emulate, a lesson sometimes people have a hard time parsing. but also, you know, like, okay, how are the different ways we can be in the world, right? So like finding myself hurt was like, oh, okay, here's a real, can I curse?
Oh, yes, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Here's a real motherfucking crisis, you know? Like, you know, crisis on hobbled Evan. You know, like, and one of the things that happened, like in the hospital where it was, you know, they start PT right away, like the day after you have surgery, right? Because the idea is like the more sedentary you are, the longer and harder a road it is to recover your muscle strength and mobility. And, you know, look, I'm in my mid to late 40s, which is a really young age to get an injury like that. So they're like, oh, we just thought, you know, you being so young, you'd be back on your feet stronger. I'm like, you guys cut into my muscles, you know, and put metal into my bones. And I don't even know what I'm feeling right now. Like, one of the things that happens is that your body lays down scar tissue really intensely at the incision site, right? So, it doesn't align well with the muscle fibers. So, it was really hard at first. I'm like, is that, and I asked them, I was like, am I feeling the metal? And they're like, no, that's, and intellectually I know this, right? Like I know that there's like layers of muscle between my bone and my epidermis, but like emotionally I'm like, this part of my body's all hard now. Why is it the metal you put in it? And like, you know, and they're like, well, we thought you'd be back on your feet sooner. I'm like, you gotta give me a minute here, guys. Give me 24 hours, like after having, you know, my leg cut open and metal shoved inside before you asked me to get up and start dancing. So grappling with that was like, oh, okay, this is like, you know, a moment not unlike those in, you know, the dramatic fictions that I've written about and written, yeah. You know, this is like, okay, you're down on your knees now, literally. And getting up from your knees with a broken hip is pretty hard. Let me just say that as a sidebar. But like, yeah, you know, and there's a project I was working on, which will be out soon. And I had a nightmare. One of the nights I was in the hospital, and I mean, not to put too fine a point on it, but this is actually what happened. I was in the hospital, barely able to sit up on my own, and I had a nightmare that cops busted in and dragged me out of my bed and dragged me to the street. And let's just say I took some of that and went back to the creative team I was working with on this project and was like, if I'm feeling this, other people are feeling it.
Right.
And how can we talk about society and what it's going through in this project in a way that hopefully can reach people and tell people to hold on, or at least that they're not alone, you know?
Right.
And we tried, you know. I don't want to say anything more than that, but
I think the point you're getting to is that, you know, we've seen so much art come out, you know, being very explicitly political when it's been political, yeah. Art and comics and games, you know, politics has been in there all along, but
yeah,
it's kind of the part of the fabric of entertainment is that it gives us this permission to, you know, ask us these things under the cover of entertainment. And what it sounds like what you did is just part of, you know, it's the long history of comics and games,
but it's also asking an open question. You didn't go saying, hey, this happened to me and this is what it's about.
No,
you said other people must be experiencing this, let's unpack this, create dove into the creative aspect to filter and examine.
Yeah, very much so. And you know, one of the things, what's this going up, guys?
Next week.
Oh, next week.
Okay. Yeah, I guess I can say it. One of the things I was working on when I got hurt was the second season of Genlock, which was a Rooster Teeth animated show. Mm-hmm. If you're not familiar with it, listeners, it's a team of young pilots who have their minds digitized and use their digitized consciousnesses to steer giant robots. So I worked a bit on the first season, and I'd been in the writer's room for the second season for a couple of months when I got hurt. And, you know, your relationship with your body changes when you get hurt. And one of the things we've been extrapolating in the show is like your relationship with your body and the rest of the world changes when your mind becomes untethered to your physical existence. It's not like a brand new concept in science fiction, right? But like, it became very real for me when I was hurt in a hospital bed. It was like, oh, okay, well, you know, if I could transform my mind into another body, that'd be really great right now, you know, like that'd be fun. But you know, we try to think about that core concept of this technology, of the Genlock technology, in different ways. So yeah, there's a whole fun part of steering a giant robot, but what are the other parts that come with it? And you know, that's enough teasing about that. I'm not even clear to talk about it. So we'll see how much trouble I get into.
But what I love about that is, I mean, culturally, we have this idea that art is where artists are going to express their ideas about the world. But in fact, that's not what's actually going on. What's going on is the art is examining and asking the same questions that all human beings are asking. How does this work? Where do I place? What can I do?
And, you know, Adam, it's funny you say that, like ideas, you know, we tend to associate that act of ideation with your brain, but like for me, a lot of this was emotional and coming from my heart and my gut. You know, this was like a response to something that happened to me, and yeah, the impulse was to funnel it into my art, but that impulse didn't come from my brain necessarily all the time. It came from my heart and my gut, and you know, definitely worse things happen to people in the world. I don't want to make it sound like, you know, oh, woe is me. Like I'm on the road to recovery and I acknowledge, you know, the social positioning and privilege that I that allowed me to get through this, right? And continue to get through this. But yeah, like the idea that your creativity is walled off from the circumstances you live in has always been ludicrous to me, you know? Like you see a lot of times in various fan communities, we don't want politics in our video games or our comics or whatever. It's like, you know, like to do something like to treat whiteness as a default, you know, is a political decision. It can be an unconscious one. It can be one that you don't realize even that you're making, but like that's politics, you know, like there is a cultural politics at work there. And it's naive or blinkered to not see that. And, you know, look, Black Lives Matter, those three words have become a clarifying statement for a sociopolitical movement of the time. But like, what it's talking about ain't new, you know, like, and I say that because this is a feeling and an ethos that's always been important to me, and not just me, millions of other people throughout the world. So the idea that this is when it's being presented as something that it's not, that lets you know that there are some people who are not ready to face the kind of denial, the ignorance about how their world is ordered. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And some of us have not had that luxury. Anyway, I feel like I'm going all over the place.
No. This is exactly like, you know, I want the conversation to go as if we were having dinner, right?
So here we go.
I think that thing that in the stuff we exercise our creativity in, we are mostly asking questions.
Yeah.
Rather than giving answers. And I think that when people say, I don't want politics, I think a large portion of their brains is thinking of politics as the thing that the news tells them about. It's the horse race.
Yes.
But really, all art has always dealt with the way we want to live, the type of society and culture and world we want to live in, and how we want to live with each other, and the ways in which narratives can help us unpack those visions.
Yes. Yeah. So one of the things I've been doing over the last couple of years, and this has been announced so I can say this, well, I've been serving as a narrative design consultant on Marvel's Spider-Man Miles Morales, which Insomniac is doing.
I'm super excited about that.
You should be, because it's gonna be awesome. But like, to the point you were making, Adam, like, when you ask the question, how is Miles Morales different than Peter Parker? How's his life different? That's politics. That's a that's a question of politics, you know? Like, what are the forces that have acted on Miles differently than they would have on Peter, you know? And like, I don't want to speak for the whole team, but like, that is something that we considered during making that game, you know? Like, and I think it's something that will come through. So, you know, to sit there and be like, well, you know, this character who wears a Spider-Man costume should be exactly the same as the other character who wears a Spider-Man costume without considering who's in the costume and where they live and how they live. Just, I mean, forget being like unrealistic. It's bad storytelling, you know, in my opinion.
Well, it's walling off a whole path of storytelling too. Right. And right. A good storyteller, you want to find it. You want to find every part of every of the narrative wherever you can go chase it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. And look, when you run up against limits where you may not necessarily have the range or the reach to meet your ambition, that's where you can do research. That's where you can talk to other people who may have experiences different than yours, you know, and, you know, broaden your horizons with the hope that new reservoir of information that you, an experience that you get from engaging with the world a certain way, makes its way back into the work. You know, like, there's tons of stuff I didn't know working into this game. You know, like, yeah, you can draw some commonalities about, oh, well, you know, I was once a 15, 16, 17-year-old black kid walking around New York City, and there are some commonalities that I have with this character, and I can bring that to the experience. But, like, there's lots of stuff about that character that doesn't mirror my experience as an adolescent growing up in New York City. And then I have to research and talk to other people and think about things. And, you know, so it's not just like, okay, this character has some aspects of his experience that mirror mine. It's more about like, okay, but what's different? How can we bring that to life? You know? And I think you're doing yourself a disservice as a creative person if you're not thinking that way.
I'm curious. Years ago, I saw Tarantino in an interview talking about writing Jackie Brown.
Yeah.
And he said there was this point in which he was writing the screenplay that Jackie started saying different stuff than she was saying in the book, and he was letting it happen. He was like, I was surprised she kept telling Ordell everything that was going on. And so he called up Elmore Leonard and said, is this okay? And Elmore Leonard said, this is your story now. You do what you want. And I know that as a journalist and a critic, you probably wrote stories that ended up in very different places than you expected them to end up when you started writing them. And I'm curious about the difference or the commonality between that kind of writing and the creative narrative writing you're doing right now.
Yeah, so that's a good point. As a journalist and a critic, you know, what the commonality between all those disciplines is storytelling, right?
Yeah.
As a journalist, you're helping your subject and your readers learn about truths and events and points of view that they may not necessarily have experienced in their day-to-day lives, right? You're in pursuit of a truth that comes through your subject, right? The person you're interviewing or you're profiling or the events that you're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. And how they illuminate certain truths about the world, right? So as a critic, you're trying to figure out what the truth of your experience is in engaging with a cultural artifact, right? So when I go see a movie, it's like, okay, why do I like it? What is it about this worldview that is presenting to me that tickles different parts of my brain? Or conversely, why do I hate it? You know? And when you're creative and narrative side of things, it's okay, well, what truths are present in this narrative construct that I can illuminate? What ones are hidden that I can dig out by thinking about the possibilities of the world building and the character personalities and all that stuff, right? So like, it's more, yes, and it's an act of creation, but also like, I think leaving the space open to be surprised. Yeah. By certain elements of the fiction that you're engaging with is super important to me. I mean, when I was writing Rise of the Black Panther, you know, I consider myself pretty well versed in like the mythos of Wakanda. But, you know, when I started thinking about, okay, well, why would this have happened that way? Or why wouldn't this have happened that way? And you go back and you read them like, yeah, nobody really dealt with this, huh? Or, you know, part of what my job was on that, like my mandate to myself was like, okay, make these different versions, these different iterations of these characters work. You know, like, right. Sure, he didn't exist in 1966 when Stan
Lee. Find some commonality.
Right. Yeah. And so it's like, okay, well, how does she interact with the character who Jack Kirby created, right? You know, like in 1970, whatever. Like, and what are the frictions? What are the tensions there? So like, and does it give you something bigger about the idea of Wakanda in the fiction? And for me, it did. So that was pretty cool. Anyway.
One of my favorite parts of reading Rise of the Black Panther, and maybe this is unique to comics as well, is that you can in one panel spark so much world building in the reader as well. You can like describe a location with four words, right? Like some vibranium mine, right? And then the reader automatically populates it with what they think. And it makes me wonder, you know, you've talked about writing for comics and animation and also contributing to interactive storytelling in games. You know, those are different relationships with the audience.
Yeah.
What do you enjoy about each of those differently or more in the way you write?
So games has been a huge learning curve, right? Some of the games projects that I'm on, like, video games change so much when they're being made, you know? It's like one section, like, okay, here are the narrative plot beats, right? And here's how the player is going to move through the space and the modes of interaction that are going to be available to them. And, you know, you go away for a couple of months, you come back, and this has literally happened to me, like, oh, you know, we changed this level, or we changed this design, and now, you know, we're going to have to write some things to make it all make sense. And that's fun, but it's also like trying to, like, put a saddle on a hurricane, right? It's like, okay, I'm just going to ride this thing to my destination, and it's like, you may not even make it there, buddy. So it's a very, very hybrid form. And I just realized the whole saddle hurricane thing is a very Texas metaphor for New York. As somebody who still identifies as a native New Yorker, that just shocked me. I'm going to have to sit with that for a minute.
But it's massively collaborative. There are so many kind of machinations at work.
Yes,
talk about hundreds of people working on this. I think we got a glimpse of that. You know, like I saw the Disney making of Frozen behind the scenes series. And they talk about, like, you can animated films, you can release a trailer because you have certain parts rendered animated, but the story isn't complete. And up until like the last 4 months, and I'm sure for games, like, they may have their major beats, but the connective tissue and the themes can all change.
Zootopia, the entire plot changed.
Yeah.
Late in production.
Yeah. So it's really, it's weird, you know, like, and especially for some of the things I've been involved with, it's like the different iterations coexist in your head. So it's like, okay, what's this faction's motivation again? Is it still the thing from 3 months ago, or did it change? Like, it's really fun, but super challenging. You know, like, comics is collaborative on a much smaller scale, right? Like, it's you and an editor and an artist, right? And letterers and colorists, but it's a small, much smaller team, right? Video games is just like so huge. And animation too, like, you know, working on season 2 of Genlock, it was me and 4 of the writers in a room, right? But you hand that stuff off, and some pre-production art starts to come in, and you get feedback, you get notes, and you're like, oh, wait, this is taking on a totally different life of its own outside of the writer's room. And you realize, oh, wait, like, if this thing gets made, there's still plenty of surprises to be had for me as part of the machine that makes this thing, you know? So that's cool too, you know? Like, it prevents you from being jaded, I think. Being open to the wonder of the process is a pretty cool new feeling, experience for me, to be perfectly honest.
It sounds like you're having a really deep and awesome creative period. I mean, it sounds like you're in the middle of a very creative period.
Yeah. You know, it's, I always say to, like, friends and family, like, this is, I've only been really in this new paradigm for like 2 years. Right. Like, it's, mm-hmm. it's very much like a late in the day career shift. Right. And, you know, one that was like definitely fraught with a lot of worry and concern, like, can I still ask myself if I can make a sustainable career out of this, you know? Like, it's a question I ask myself every day, and you know, will I be good at it, you know? Do I have value to offer? But, like, when I wake up every morning and think about, how do I get into this character's head, or, you know, how can I collaborate with people who are building this world, and when people come to me with, like, a certain level of trust and excitement and curiosity, like, you just try to honor that, you know? Like, I have friends of mine who are like supremely talented writers and world builders, you know? And I feel like maybe barely out of apprentice mode into journeyman mode, right? Like, I feel like I'm still learning to, like, master my tools and figure out, you know, I mean, it's probably not all that different than what you do, Adam, you know? Like, you know, you're like, yeah, you know, lots of basics, you know, you have, like, a pretty multivalent, like, tiers of knowledge, but, like, you know, like, you sit down to make something, you're like, okay, I could do it this way, or I could do it this way, or somebody else might do it differently. And that heady rush of like possibilities of approaches, like, is really cool. But you know, like, you still worry about flop sweat and imposter syndrome and all this stuff, you know, like, you never know how something's going to land, if your intent is going to, you know, satisfy a desire in an audience or a player or whatever.
That's, or even that, in yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, I'm finding myself doing some really cool things. And, you know, beyond that horizon is another horizon where, like, there are certain projects I'm helping to develop now that, like, oh my gosh, if this thing makes it into the world, like, I will have achieved a large part of my purpose on this planet. Like, that's what I tell myself. And
well, that carries with it its own weight too, because, like, we're having a very productive and fertile moment on our crew and with the stuff that we've been putting out. But that also is like, all that's going on is misery and so much needless suffering, and that carries its own weight on top of that.
Then, Adam, you got people in LA flying jetpacks, and they're like, you got to one up that now, buddy. They're all up in your space, all up in your house.
My Iron Man suit was not out flying that day, I promise.
But yeah, so it's just like, oh, okay, there are new summits to access, right? There's like, you know, not to sound all like corny and poetic about it, but like, yeah, you know, like, okay, I wrote a comic book featuring my favorite comic book character. What's next?
Right. You know?
Like, and that's coming in pretty like, well, you know, the rarity of me getting to do that does not escape me. And, but the problem is, and then you have the hunger, right? It's like, okay, well, what am I going to do next? You know? And I'm lucky that I'm getting to do some really cool things. But, you know, there's other stuff, my own, what we call in comic creator owned ideas. Like, you know, there's like finding the cycles, the bandwidth cycles to work on that stuff. Oh, like, yeah. is super hard. But I'm like, look, if you want something that you made to be out there, like, you're going to have to find the time. And it's super challenging. But like, you know, sometimes I'll wake up in the middle of the night and scribble some ideas down and be like, I can go back to sleep now because I've wrote a couple of sentences and I'm helping flesh this thing out a little bit more. You know, it might be years, but like, you know, as long as I don't break my other hip or anything else.
Well, it sounds like you're doing a practice that I've been doing a lot of during this lockdown too, which is counting your blessings on a very constant basis.
Yeah. Yeah, very much so. Like, again, I hope she doesn't get mad at me, but like, my girlfriend and I, we met during the pandemic, and I tell her all the time, it's like, how crazy? How crazy is this? Like, I'm madly in love with her, and I'm like, how crazy is it that we met like this, you know? Like, during this time, you know? Yeah. And then I broke a bone. and, you know, was living in a very different way than how she met me, and yeah. I am counting my blessings, but you know, like, part of what comes with that is the intense knowledge that other people can't, you know, and you realize, look, being laid up in the hospital and being a freelance contract creator who, you know, essentially lives check to check, right? It clarifies certain things like, oh yeah, the healthcare system in this country
not
really gonna fuck us over.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm making light of it because it is absurd to be thrown into broad relief like that, you know? Like, to have that reality smack you in the face like that. And, you know, I had insurance. I was lucky enough to have insurance and to have coverage by virtue of the job I was doing when I got hurt. But man, if I didn't, I probably couldn't afford the Wi-Fi to make this call to talk to you right now, you know, and that's real.
Yeah.
So yeah, like I am counting my blessings, but man, the need for a better world, really smacks you in the face when you go through a change like that.
I'll bet.
Well, thank you so much. We're almost out of time here. I don't know if that was an up note or a down note. No, I think it was a real note. Yeah. We all feel privileged in our own ways. And with that, you know, comes great responsibility. And I think you're doing your part in telling the stories that help us connect with each other. And, you know, I think that's an important part of why art is important right now, this time. So thank you so much, Evan.
Thank you so much.
I'm so inspired by what you're getting to do right now, man. It's really exciting.
Look, let's talk again soon.
Yeah, let's definitely talk again soon.
All right, Evan, guys, thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for coming on the podcast. We'll check back in very soon.
All right, take care, everybody.
Thank you, man. Bye.